All right, well, welcome back to our class, Sacrifice of Christ in the Old and New Testament. We're a little short tonight, but we'll pray for Brother Larry. Tonight we'll be looking at Sacrifice of Christ according to Matthew, Mark. Primarily chapter 27 and chapter 15 of Mark, but we're going to actually begin in chapter 26, look at the very end of the chapter. For any of those taking notes, these are the scriptures we'll be looking at tonight, starting in Matthew 26, verses 47 through 68, then the first two verses of chapter 27, then verses 11 through 54, and 57 through 60. And I have Mark's the parallel passages in Mark there as well. I'm not trying to necessarily skip around, but trying to stay on what is pertinent to our topic. We got about 70-something verses there to cover tonight. Now, we're not going to comment on every last single verse, but this covers from the betrayal all the way to the burial of Christ. And my plan is to read through Matthew's gospel, and we'll insert some comments from Mark when he gives us some different detail. By and large, Matthew and Mark's accounts are very, very similar. Well, let's go ahead and go to Matthew chapter 26 and verse number 47. If you are familiar with where we're at here, Christ had been in the garden. He'd been praying, and the disciples, they were having a hard time staying awake. It was nighttime. But verse 47 here, it says, "And while he," that is Jesus, "yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12," he had already left to betray him, "came, and with a great multitude with swords and staves from the chief priests and elders of the people. Now he that betrayed him gave them a sign, saying, Whomsoever I shall kiss, that same is he, hold him fast. And forthwith he came to Jesus and said, Hail, Master, and kissed him. And Jesus said unto him, Friend, wherefore art thou come? Then came they and laid hands on Jesus and took him." Here we see the betrayal and arrest of Christ. As we know, Judas was filled with this devil here earlier and was sold him for 30 pieces of silver. Now, like I mentioned last week, certainly the sacrifice of Christ really entails his entire life and all the way through to his resurrection, but primarily we're speaking of his sufferings and death here and the resurrection as well. So here really begins where his suffering starts. In the garden he was in anguish, if you will. He was suffering spiritually, mentally. And his physical suffering will begin here shortly. Let's go on to the next verse. Verse 51 says, "And behold, one of them which were with Jesus stretched out his hand and drew his sword." Now this was Peter, according to John's gospel. He struck a servant, of the high priest and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, "Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword." Let's notice these next two verses here. "Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that thus it must be?" See, we notice here, well, Peter was a little, I don't know if you want to use the word ambitious. He thought he was going to defend Christ. And certainly we ought to be willing to defend God and Christ, but he's really more than capable of defending himself. So you notice verse 53, Christ said, "Thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels?" Understand correctly, that would be more than 12,000 angels. But he says, "How then shall these scriptures be fulfilled that thus it must be?" So I think I mentioned last week, God and Christ himself had the power to deliver, but he really couldn't because the scriptures had to be fulfilled. You know, he had to be true to his word. He had to be true to his preordained purpose. He had to die for his people. But certainly he had the power, if he so chose, if I could say it that way, to deliver himself from that. You know, the Muslims say that Christ was a good person, but that he wasn't God himself, because God himself wouldn't allow himself to be crucified. But that's exactly what Christ did. He, for lack of a better way of putting it, he allowed them to crucify him. Let's go on to verse 55 here. It says, "In that same hour said Jesus to the multitudes, are you come out against a thief with swords and staves for to take me?" Or as a thief. He says, "I sat daily with you, teaching in the temple, and you laid no hold on me. But all this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Then all his disciples forsook him and fled." They came to Christ as if he was some thief or criminal. And he said, I was with you in the temple daily. Christ, they could have easily taken Christ before if they had wanted to. Oftentimes they sought to, but Christ himself made an escape. But here they come as if like some mob that was going to take away this criminal. But Isaiah says he went willingly. He went as a sheep to her shears, or the sheep to the slaughter. All this was done that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Another prophecy of Christ was in Psalms 41:9. We won't turn there, but it tells us that about the betrayal of Judas. He said that a familiar friend had lifted up his heel against him, when he that ate bread with him. It was prophesied way before Judas ever came along that he would betray Christ. Christ knew when he chose Judas that he would be the betrayer. It all had to be done that the scriptures might be fulfilled. Then all his disciples forsook him and fled. They all left Christ. They didn't stay around. Peter did kind of follow from a distance, as verse 58 tells us. It says, "And they that had laid hold on Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed him afar off under the high priest's palace and went in and sat with the servants to see the end." So here we see Christ carried off to the judgment place, really to be condemned by the Jews and then later by Pilate. But no one stood around with him. There was no one there to help him, even at this point. I don't know. Luke was not one of the 12, but I don't know if he was somewhat close, because he records for us some different things that none of the other Gospels do. I know at the crucifixion, John was close enough that Christ could speak to him on the cross. But at this point, there was none around. Well, let's go on to the next verse, verse 59. Here it says, "Now the chief priests and elders and all the council sought false witness against Jesus to put him to death, but found none. Yea, though many false witnesses came, yet they found none." See, they all these false witnesses coming against them, yet they could not find any accusation against him. Mark's gospel tells us that they couldn't agree, the false witnesses. Under Jewish law, you had to have at least two or three witnesses. And here, they had multiple ones coming, but they were conflicting each other. They weren't agreeing on what to accuse Christ of. But then the end of verse 60 says, "At last came two false witnesses and said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. Now, of course, Christ is speaking of the body, his own body in particular. But they thought he was speaking of the literal temple. Now, Christ could have destroyed it and built it again in 3 days. I say he could do it in about 3 seconds, really. He spoke this world into existence. He could certainly speak a temple into existence as well. But they would use this to accuse him of blasphemy eventually. It says, "And the high priest arose and said unto him, Answerest thou nothing? What is it which these witnesses against thee? Or which these witness against thee? But Jesus held his peace, and the high priest answered and said unto him, I adjure thee by the living God that thou tell us whether thou be the Christ, the Son of God." And here we see again, he was as a lamb that was dumb, that was led to the slaughter. He would open not his mouth, Isaiah says. You know, he could have said, "Oh, these are false accusations." No, he could have been like us and got mad at false accusations, but yet it just says he willingly suffered what was given to him. And he says, "I adjure thee," or I compel thee, the false priest, or the high priest, excuse me, were really by an oath is what that implies. They were commanding him to tell them, "Well, are you the Christ?" If you remember from our reading over in Leviticus 5,